Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows tough jobs call for tougher tools. The new DeWalt Elite Series power tool accessories are built to last for the pro who doesn't stop. With precision fitment, durability, and impact resistance, finishing jobs faster has never been easier. Shop the new DeWalt Elite Series at an everyday low price, exclusively at Lowe's. We help, you save.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to hour number two, live right here on this Thursday on the early line on Sports Grid. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. A lot of football to get into here as week number six kicks off tonight in the Pacific Northwest. A divisional duel in the NFC West between the Seahawks and the 49ers. San Francisco, a Super Bowl favorite before the year got underway, off to a sub 500 start. Does that change tonight? But DRS, we did just show you some news around the NFL as everybody is back on the practice field getting ready for their week six contest. For the Steelers, that's out in Sin City on Sunday. Pittsburgh started 3-0. They've now dropped two consecutive games, losing each by a single score late. But that's where it's been with Justin Fields. Russell Wilson back on the practice field since the opening week of September. It's been a very interesting quarterback room in the Steel City. Mike Tomlin had said even way back in training camp and in the offseason, doesn't matter if Justin Fields looks better in practice or in preseason contests, Russell Wilson is our starter. But then, of course, it was a calf injury that has been the ailment that has kept Russell Wilson on the sideline. If Russ is 100% healthy, who do you think is the starting quarterback in the Steel City?
This is one where now Justin Fields is hanging on by a thread. And quite frankly, I don't think he should be. Like, they got up to a 3-0 start. You ask him to be your starting quarterback and win football games, he did that. Now taking a couple losses, but these losses aren't on Justin Fields. Do you want to tell me that that Colts game is like, it's Fields' fault. Over 300 yards. Yes, he did have a couple turnovers, but ran in two touchdowns, 50-plus yards rushing. And then last week where he goes, all right, tough environment, you know, hour and a half delay in the game, wet, soggy field. When I left that football field, we had the lead, which meant that not even a field goal should be able to overtake us. Dallas had to drive the length of the field and score a touchdown, and they did. That's not his fault. So he's going to play this weekend against Vegas, which they should win, and they're favored to do so. FanDuel has him listed at a three-point favorite, but I just feel like he's now at that point where he's looking over his shoulder when theoretically he shouldn't be doing that. His football game is fine. The Pittsburgh Steelers just need to get it together a little bit on defense, which never should have been an issue. So I look at this game and even say, Ben, let's just say Aiden O'Connell is going to start. I want to talk about him in just a moment as well. But if it's not going their way, 10-7 at the half, they're down. We know Mike Tomlin, from the day they acquired Russell Wilson, is looking for any chance to put him in that football game and have a chance to win. And the shame of it is, this is an opponent for the Pittsburgh Steelers you're supposed to beat. So if they win, that's good for Fields. But if there's any struggle and Russ comes in a tie game at the half and wins it, Tomlin's going to be like, see that? Put the guy in, won the football game. What maturity. Unbelievable. He was prepared. Yeah. He's a hard worker and all this stuff. The easy access to remove Justin Fields. It's on Justin Fields to say, you know what? It's my football team. We win this game 24-10, 24-13, 27-17, where I controlled the tempo and I won this game on offense. That's what I'm looking for. But your question, sooner than later, Russ is getting out there. It's just a formality.
The Pittsburgh Steelers right now still slightly favored to miss the playoffs, but a better outlook with a winning record in the first 5 weeks to make the postseason. DRS, I know you guys talked about this yesterday, but only six teams in what we expected to be the more competitive conference, that being the AFC, have a winning record. So this gauntlet that we expected where 10, 11 wins might be the minimum for a wild card team could look a little bit different around the AFC when all is said and done. Now, you wanted to talk about Aiden O'Connell. Go ahead.
Yeah, here's the interesting part about that. This, to me, coming in the season, they were a dead team walking. But I can never fault a head coach for saying, we brought in a veteran quarterback, and I actually think he gives us the best chance to win football games. General managers and owners can tell you who to start when it's not best for the football team, but maybe best for the future. It's hard to tell a head coach, like, I actually watched the practices here, and Gardner Minshew's the right guy. But for the future of the Raiders, Gardner Minshew's not the right guy for that team. Here's one thing you have to do. Let Aiden O'Connell play the rest of the games all the way through. And it's not an indictment in Gardner Minshew. You have to find out what you have, because if you need that quarterback, which I do think they need, find out sooner than later. Head into the draft next year with a game plan, because you're not going to do anything unless you have a quarterback. I saw that move and it was like, oh, they're doing Gardner Minshew wrong. No, they're actually doing the right thing for the franchise. O'Connell, and it could be, if they go and say, hey, look, he had a bad first half, I got to put Minshew in to try to win it, well, then you're just up the creek at that point. Let this kid play the rest of the string. The Raiders are dead in the water this year. At least find out if you have a competent quarterback. I agree with this move.
The Raiders are a 3-point home underdog. As an interim head coach, they were 7-1-1 against the spread, competitive in games under Antonio Pierce. They were not expected to be. Hasn't been the case outside of their outright wins so far this season. Now, I'll just say this. I'm an Aiden O'Connell guy, but he's a 26-year-old second-year quarterback. And yes, it was a fourth-round pick, and any draft capital is expensive in the NFL, especially on a quarterback in terms of relative value. To me, though, DRS, the Raiders are going to finish with one of the worst 10 records in the NFL, meaning they will have a top 10 draft pick, meaning they will select their quarterback of the future.
Yeah.
That's just how I see it. Yep. And it's not like, ooh, we didn't really see Aiden O'Connell last year. He played in 11 games. He made 10 starts. I think you kind of know what his ceiling is. I agree. It probably makes more sense in terms of the optimism to let him spin as opposed to Gardner Minshew, who is a great, reliable veteran and experienced backup quarterback for more of a contending team that if anything were to happen, he can go out there and chalk up a couple of wins. Probably not for this Raiders team that there's not a lot expected of, at least in my mind.
Yeah, and correct, but that's a healthy organization trying to make the right decision, because you're right. He's not a 21-year-old guy, but 26 as an NFL player, certainly not old specifically at the quarterback position, where if he does play well, you can even say, all right, well, next year he can be on the roster. And Gardner Minshew is the best backup in football. If you say, you know what, I have a competent team that's looking to make the playoffs and make a Super Bowl run, and my starting quarterback goes down 1 or 2 weeks, I can make an impact. Like, look at the Miami Dolphins right now, and they did have a big win against the New England Patriots, which sounds kind of funny to say, but if Gardner Minshew was the backup on the Miami Dolphins, maybe they win an extra two games here before Tua Tagovailoa comes back. Boy, backup quarterback, and we've talked about it ad nauseum this morning, having a legitimate one here can just even just keep your head above water over four games and go 2-2 is so big in this day and age that so many franchises just completely overlook.
I completely agree, DRS. So Aiden O'Connell will get that start week number 6.
Yeah.
No Devontae Adams for Las Vegas. Nope. Still should be a good defense. Christian Wilkins, though, probably out for a few weeks. Let's get to the start of week number 6 on this Thursday night in Seattle. A crucial divisional duel for a team expected to easily handle this division and maybe easily handle the entirety of the NFC, but anything but for the 49ers in the opening 5 weeks. San Francisco is the sub-500 team in the Northwest tonight against a Seahawks team that started 3-0 and has come back down to earth ever so slightly, dropping 2 consecutive games. San Francisco, DRS, a favorite in every game since the beginning of last season. So to see them as a road favorite is no shock. 3.5 points tonight in favor of the Niners. But short week, road Thursday night, divisional football game. Can San Francisco cover that spread?
I think they can, and usually I am a home team guy on Thursday nights, but let's also rewind last week. Maybe the two most embarrassing losses in the NFL came from the NFC West, where the 49ers had a double-digit lead at home and got beat by Arizona, and then you said, well, the Giants are coming to town without Neighbors and without Singletary. That should be a walk in the park for Seattle, and they lost that game. Here's the way I try to play it out, because pedigree, right? I think the more talented team is San Francisco, and quite frankly, you are banged up a little bit on that Seattle defense. And also, from a Seattle look, look at the games that they played. Game number 1, the Broncos, who seem to be a decent team at this point. at that time, they're still playing a rookie quarterback on the road in his first career start. That offense was terrible. Then you take a look at, you know, you're playing teams like the Dolphins. You get smashed by them. The Patriots, terrible football team. And then you look at the Lions and the Giants. We say the Lions actually have a formidable offense. They absolutely hammered that defense on Seattle. And then you take a look at the Giants, which came in half-baked and rolled right over your football team. So when I look at that strength of schedule over the first 5 weeks, and I said the Dolphins, they rolled them. Well, the Dolphins came in without their quarterback. So now you're coming with an elite offense here and a good quarterback in Brock Purdy. They should move the football up and down that field tonight against the Seahawks, Ben.
Just to clarify, the Hawks rolled the Dolphins, but that was Skylar Thompson's first game.
Correct.
24-3 for Seattle. That was their only cover of the year. Plenty more from Thursday Night Football and the start of Week 6 next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Thursday Night Football kicks off week number 6 of this NFL season. The San Francisco 49ers and the Seattle Seahawks. The Niners a 3.5-point road favorite up in the Northwest against the Hawks. Total is 49.5. DRS, a Seattle team that started 3-0, but entering a big Monday Night Football game in Detroit, we question just how true or perhaps fraudulent that 3-0 beginning was for Mike McDonald and this Seahawks team. Frankly, they've come back down to earth, and they're 1-3-1 against the spread. The only cover against Skylar Thompson and the Finns out in Seattle, week number 3. Well, San Francisco hasn't been great either, and at least Seattle still has a winning record above 500 entering week 6. The San Francisco 49ers, the Super Bowl co-favorites entering the year alongside KC, the very short favorites, nearly half the price of everybody else in the NFC to win that conference crown entering this season, are sub-500. They are 2-3. They have been booked as a favorite in all 5 games this year. They have covered in each of their wins. Week number 1 against the Jets. Week number 4 as a double-digit favorite against the New England Patriots at home. And oh, by the way, they've gone over in both of their wins. But Donnie, the Niners have been a favorite in every football game, even Super Bowl 58, dating back to the start of last season. They're just 11-14 against the spread. And to me, this is an easy spot. If you want to be a Super Bowl favorite, if you want to win the NFC, if you want to be looked at as the favorite to win a conference crown, this is a game, despite it being a short week, the 49ers go on the road, win comfortably, and even cover as a 3.5-point road favorite. But it is a short week Thursday Night Football game, and that's what draws the doubt into my mind.
It does. And also, we're banking on the 49ers here, Ben, being that football team that we've known and loved, saying, man, they're very talented. They're hammering football teams on the way to the NFC Championship, on the way to the Super Bowl. It hasn't been that team. Yes, we love the win over the Jets week 1. How good are the Jets actually at that point? Minnesota Vikings go on the road and they get beat in that game. The Vikings look like they're going to be a pretty formidable opponent here in the NFC. But then the Rams with basically nobody up double digits to blow that football game. You don't get any points for beating the Patriots. That's a horrendous franchise right now. And then the Cardinals came in, they had a double-digit lead, stole that game at the end and walked away with a victory. So we're just anticipating, oh, it's no big deal at this point. Like some people might look at the Bengals like, oh, the offense is so good. They're 1-4. I don't care. They're going to make a playoff run. You are what your record says as you are. So now you line up against the Seahawks. But here's where I think the Seahawks are going to be at odds is that defense, as we pointed out, who they played and where they got their style points from are maybe the easiest opponents you can possibly have. And you're going to get tested. But I do like the fact that the Niners blew that game last week because they understand they're under 500. It's like, hey, you know what, Ben? We were unbeaten last week coming in. Maybe took the game a little bit easy, took our foot up the gas up double digits. Where's that excuse when you're under 500? You don't have that at this point here. So I do expect the 49ers, I think, have a better offense than Seattle overall, quite frankly, a better overall defense. But that defense didn't show its teeth last week at all. Arizona was doing whatever they wanted to in big spots. And on a key fourth down play, a ball that was a 50-50 jump ball downfield, Arizona won that and ended up driving down and getting the game-winning drive. So I look at this and say, I want to trust the 49ers. But at the same time, my brain's telling me, you're going to trust the 49ers based on who they beat and who they played this year as if they're going to go on a road on a Thursday night. And they're not getting points. They got to win roughly by a touchdown tonight to cover that 3.5. We'll see if they can get it done. I think they can do that. Not in love with it, but I trust that Niners offense to go up against that Seattle defense.
I would agree, DRS, and frankly, I would also be looking to points if it wasn't a short week Thursday night football game. Seattle's defense has not been good under first-year head coach Mike McDonald. In fact, the Hawks have been over in four of five games. As we show you the totals for tonight, Seattle has allowed 29 points in both of their losses, 42 in the only game as an underdog on the road in Detroit a couple of weeks ago. They've allowed at least 20 in four of five games. The only one not 20, 3 points against Skylar Thompson and Miami. And as we have seen, the Dolphins remain a bottom three scoring offense in the National Football League. The Patriots scored 20 points in regulation. The Broncos somehow, some way, even found 20 points despite multiple turnovers from Bo Nix in his rookie debut in the National Football League. In San Francisco, it's, again, not a surprise that you score more in wins than in losses, but they've put up at least 30 in each of their first two wins this season. And Donnie, there's been a little bit of issue with a San Francisco team who was up double digits, like you said, 23-10 at the break against Arizona last week. The offense was blanked in the second half, but that should have been a spot that a great 49ers defense excels. San Francisco allowing more than 21 points per game. Last year, third best scoring defense in the NFL, 17.5 points per game given up in the regular season on average. Best scoring defense in the NFL in 2022, the only team allowing less than 17 points per game. If it was a Sunday football game and the total was 49.5 in Seattle, over. Short week Thursday night football game, again, I do have my doubts.
Yeah, there is always doubts on what type of performance we get. And also, keep in mind, it's a divisional game. It's not like two teams that never seen each other and they're going to be surprised completely. That's what happened. And also, you can go back in the past years and watch that defense for Seattle and say, under the new head coach, like, yeah, here's what we anticipate. Here's what's going to happen at this point. But for my money here, those ground games got to get going. And if you want to win, if you're Seattle, the one thing you do know against that 49ers defense, which usually isn't supposed to happen, you can run on them. The Jets, in a losing effort, ran for 68 yards. They're down just about that entire game. But look at the next couple games. The Vikes, 146. The Rams, 98 yards. Now, the Cardinals, you have to take a little bit with a grain of salt. They ran for 169 yards against the 49ers. A lot of that with Kyler Murray, but still, James Conner, 19 for 86 in that game. You got two capable running backs in that backfield for Seattle to sort of slow that Bosa pass rush down. And if they do that, they'll be able to hang around in this one.
DRS, we also have a matchup as we compare the quarterbacks, and we'll continue to look at the props on the other side of the break between two of the four leading passers in the NFL. Geno Smith, the most passing yards this year, 1,466. Brock Purdy, 1,374. But only six touchdowns to four interceptions for Purdy. He threw multiple INTs last week against the Cards. Geno Smith, only five touchdown tosses to four picks this season. We'll talk about the quarterbacks again. Short week Thursday night football game. Both have a prop at 250 or higher. And the individuals that will impact the outcome up next and what it all means on this Thursday night to start week six. Live right here on the Early Line. Come back and join us.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on this Thursday to start week number six of the NFL season. DRS, a matchup tonight of two quarterbacks in Seattle, one who leads the NFL in passing yards. That's Geno Smith. And another guy that ranks inside the top five, in fact, fourth, that's Brock Purdy. But in terms of touchdowns to interceptions, 5-4 for Geno Smith. 6-4 and multiple INTs thrown last week by Brock Purdy. How do you compare the quarterbacks for Thursday night?
I do have the slight edge here to Brock Purdy. The reason I say that is obviously I love the play calling Kyle Shanahan, but if he was on point last week, they win that football game. He just wasn't as decisive as you wanted him to be in the red zone. That cost him in the end. He scored touchdowns as opposed to kicking field goals or non-field goals because you don't have a kicker. That's certainly going to catch up to you, and it did last week. I expect a much cleaner performance in the pocket today for Brock Purdy. And also keep in mind, both of these quarterbacks have a lot of weapons at their disposal. Running backs, wide receivers, tight ends. We should should have a pretty competent performance out of both of them. And we're not having the expectation, oh, this guy's like, Geno Smith's been around the block quite a few times. Brock Purdy's played in some big football games. They just need to be clean. And also, we're not at full gas on both of these defenses. That's a banged up defensive line, banged up linebacking core, and banged up secondary for the 49ers, and a lot of missing pieces on Seattle. So it's rare in this day and age of, yes, we're throwing the football, to actually see two quarterbacks, Ben, at the FanDuel Sportsbook in that 250 range. How many times? 225, one's 211, one's 198. So they're expecting points tonight by posting those numbers. Both of these quarterbacks should have legitimate chances to throw two-plus touchdowns apiece, and also the anytime interception is live. Why? Because I do think we're going to get a lot of passing tonight in this game. And also keep in mind, in Seattle, you worry about those weather conditions. Is it rainy or not? Not going to be rainy tonight. Cooler conditions, light winds. We should have a perfect night for football, and these two quarterbacks should be able to get after it in the air. For me, slight edge to Purdy, because I think overall, which includes George Kittle, he does have better weapons, so I'll go that route.
Geno Smith in the opening win this year for Seattle, less than 200, pretty comfortable game against Denver. In the four since, he has been over this number in four straight. DRS, you mentioned the ground game. San Francisco allowing a buck 69 last week, a lot of that with the legs of Kyler Murray. Geno Smith not necessarily as mobile as Murray, but San Francisco allowed less than 90 yards per game on the ground a year ago, third best in the NFL. This year, about a buck 10. Seattle on the other side, giving up nearly 121 rushing yards per game. And it's not Christian McCaffrey, but Jordan Mason has been pretty good despite coughing up the football late in the fourth quarter that really did cost San Francisco a week ago. How do you compare the running backs tonight in Seattle?
I like both running backs. I think they're going to have some pretty good impacts here. You take a look at Kenneth Walker here, 103 yards, 80 yards, and a 5 for 19, which is a disappointing effort. Also was banged up a little bit. If he's healthy, the key to the running games, Ben, helps the quarterback out. Because now you talk about if you have an effective running game, the play-action pass works, the defenders can't pin their ears back, the linebackers can't crowd the line of scrimmage, and it works off. But also keep in mind, Ken Walker in the receiving game here, 57 yards, 36, and 6 yards here. And I believe that 6-yard game, I want to say he was banged up a bit there. So I do think you can attack, but you're right about this. The one thing you love about San Francisco, you're not really worried. And maybe Deebo Samuel steals a red zone carry or two, but it's not like we're working in a atmosphere of Detroit where it's like, boy, who's ever in on the goal line might get those carries, whether it's going to be Gibbs, whether it's going to be Montgomery. You have a clear lead dog. And the one thing you know, Christian McCaffrey's not coming back anytime soon. You saw the fumble in the red zone last week. What are you supposed to do with your star running back here? Say, you know what? Yep. We trust you. Let's give you those carries, 15 to 20 tonight. We'll give you the goal line work here. We know that fumble certainly was a mistake by you. That probably won't happen again. Let's go out and prove it here. But for my money, if you said, Donnie, you got to bet one player to go over his yards, it's probably Mason. Because why, Ben? If I think the Niners will be able to win this game, maybe Walker's not getting those extra 3 to 4 carries in the fourth quarter, and Mason actually is.
So, DRS, because we have two of the top four leading passers in the NFL, their pass catchers have some numbers that you can certainly dive into tonight. And let's start with Brandon Ayuk, the man who was finally paid this offseason for San Francisco and finally looking like he was worth the paycheck. 12 targets last week, 8 grabs, 147 yards. As a Brandon Ayuk fantasy owner in both of my leagues, I was very happy to finally see him have more than 50 receiving yards in a game. He came through clutch last week for the 49ers. No receiving touchdowns this year, though, for Ayuk.
Yeah, but finally good to see him back, though. You're right. There's two ways you can look at this, and sometimes you make it harder on yourself, and I love to do this. And here's what I'm stating. Ayuk finally was back to Brandon Ayuk mode. Like, this guy's our number one wide receiver, great route runner. He's open. We're finding him the football. You know, he didn't get the football last week, really. It was Deebo Samuel. So now you say to yourself, you see that 57.5, which is actually up from 55.5, where people are saying, hey, look, we didn't get you the football enough. Now we're going to make sure you get the football. The one thing I do expect is those two guys at wide receiver for San Francisco, they should be open tonight. This is a defense that can be had and an offensive coordinator that can dial it up with the best.
Plenty more player props later on, but a huge college football Saturday ahead. That's next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Week number 7, Saturday, October 12th. of this college football season is a date we have had circled on the calendar for a very, very long time. Three ranked versus ranked matchups, but the story does not just end with top 25 tilts. It is a dandy of a slate all Saturday long in college football. So to get you set for all of it, Mark Zeno joins us here on this Thursday on the Early Line on Sports Grid. Zeno, as always, we appreciate the time. Thank you for being here.
Great to be with you guys, as always, and pity those poor people. Not in Florida, but those who have chosen, I pity those people too, but those people who have chosen to get married on Saturday, and men being dragged to weddings all over the place,
yes,
not being able to watch college football. That is just a twist of fate that is cruel at the souls of men.
Hold on a second here. For all the slack that I have taken throughout my time hosting shows with Donnie Wrightside, you are telling me that the Wrightside clan has a wedding on Saturday, October 12th, this upcoming Saturday, 48 hours from now?
But hear me out. Hear me out on this. Wow. I'm not going to have any drinks. I'm not going to eat any dinner. I'm not going to have any hors d'oeuvres there. It's only 5 to 7 minutes away from my house. So theoretically, I can dip out anytime I want to at that point here. Who's saying I'm going to miss any college football?
Well, hold on a second. Again, one of the great advancements of our time as well is the fact that we can get all of these games streaming on our phone like that. That's true. Know DRS has every cable package and YouTube TV that would be necessary. True. Can I ask you a follow-up question, though? And Zeno, I promise we'll get back to the handicap. You said you can dip out whenever you feel fit. Does that get the blessing of Mrs. Wrightside?
No, there's two cars will be taken to this, yes, and it absolutely gets the blessing at this point. Why would you want me bringing down the entire evening? Because all I'm looking to do is probably go to bed by 7:30, 8 o'clock anyway. So come on,
that's. I mean, you do have to work. You do have to work Sunday morning. You do have an early day. Yeah. That is for sure. I would expect to see a little bit of DRS on the dance floor, but I guess we'll wait for a wedding in non-football season. All right, let's get into it here because two of the three ranked versus ranked tilts come in the SEC, a storied rivalry that is now in an SEC showdown, and a big one under the lights in Baton Rouge. Night football in Death Valley is always a big thing. Mark Zeno is now the mouth in the South, and it's time for his SEC picks. Outdated stinger. You know why? We didn't see Texas and Oklahoma on it, as we'll talk about the Red River rivalry in just a little bit. But let's start with a top 15 tilt, Zeno, in Death Valley. That's Tiger Stadium. Under the lights, it's 13th-ranked LSU hosting number 9 Ole Miss. The Red and Rebs bouncing back last week after a dismal defeat at home in Oxford two Saturdays ago against Kentucky. They go on the road as a 9.5-point favorite in Columbia, South Carolina, and beat the Gamecocks big 27-3. Ole Miss 5-1 straight up this year, also 5-1 against the spread. But should any team in the country be laying more than a field goal in a nighttime game in Death Valley?
Short answer is no. Certainly I'm not going to back Ole Miss in this spot. Look, Jackson Dart and this Ole Miss offense have played two lackluster games back-to-back. I mean, this is not a good South Carolina team that they played last week, despite the fact we saw them beating Kentucky. That's, I think, the anomaly, the outlier in the situation here. But, you know, this is an LSU team right now that's better on the defensive end than they have been since last year. When you look at this team as far as what they're able to do is in holding opponents to just 21.6 points per game. That's down from 28 last year. Defense coordinator Blake Baker is getting the team much better. Even if the LSU defense doesn't play as well as expected, guess what? The Tigers have an offense that can keep pace with the Rebels. Ole Miss 6th in the country in EPA per play. LSU is 12th. Nussmeier has quietly put together a great start of the year. Garrett Nussmeier, the LSU quarterback. This is an offense here that you can back. I love this spot here for LSU, who's 15-6 straight up, 13-6 ATS in revenge mode since 2016. This is a great spot here for Brian Kelly as well. Also bodes some of those great revenge numbers, 19-4 straight up, 17-4 and 2 ATS with revenge versus a foe coming off a win like Ole Miss is here. Everything to me screams this spot here for LSU. Don't bet against the Tigers in Death Valley at night. I'll take the 3.5 points.
keeping it in the SEC. How about you? You used to say, hey, the Red River rivalry. We're heading down to the Cotton Bowl in an SEC battle between Texas and Oklahoma. Yeah, get used to it. By the way, 5-0 Texas, 4-1 Oklahoma, number one team in the country, Texas, favored by over two touchdowns, a 50.5 mark, but I want to start here first. Who's playing quarterback for Texas this weekend?
I mean, that's a good question. I suppose only Steve Sarkisian knows. Does it really change my handicap of the game? No, because I think the offenses are comparable. I think this game boils down to really what can Oklahoma's offense do against a good Texas defense? I mean, that's really the rub here, because as much as I want to take Oklahoma, and everything to me screams take Oklahoma given everything that they have, it's like the Tennessee game all over again for me. Now, granted, this is a bigger number, but it's one of those where it looks like, how does Oklahoma play catch-up if they get down early? This isn't an offense I trust at this point. It's just that there's nothing redeeming, really, about this offense. So they have to keep Texas behind the chains, play with a lead, and force Texas into obvious passing situations that they could take advantage of. My problem is, again, if Texas goes up by 10 at half, what does Oklahoma really do to get back into the game if over the course of four quarters this Texas offense keeps coming and coming and coming at you? 14.5 is too rich for my blood. It's going to be a little bit of a pass for me here, and I'll enjoy the game for the sidelines. Lean Oklahoma to keep it close because of the number. But, you know, it's just I don't trust this Oklahoma offense at all.
Only five times in the last 12 years of the Red River rivalry have we seen a team even lay double digits, let alone more than two touchdowns. Those five double-digit favorites in the last decade plus in the Red River, 0-5 against the number. Nine of the last 10 between OU and Texas decided by a single score. The only one that was not, and that's in the Red River rivalry, I should add, 2022, the first year that Oklahoma was coached by Brent Venables, and Texas won big, 49-0. By the way, to answer your question, DRS, Quinn Ewers is going to get the start if he is healthy for this Longhorns team against the Sooners. It is the right decision. All right, Zeno, elsewhere around the SEC, let's fire through. I think we start with Alabama. Now number 7 in the country, the number 1 team a week ago, goes into Nashville, a difficult place to play, and loses outright as a 22.5 point favorite against Vanderbilt. Alabama, under Kalen DeBoer, its first opportunity, Zeno, to show us what it does in response to a defeat. Still laying more than 3 touchdowns at home in Bryant-Denny against South Carolina. What resilience out of the Tide do you expect to see?
Well, we're going to find out, but I would expect that their defense would play a lot better than it did in that game against Vanderbilt. Now, I've given up 35 points each of the last 2 weeks, at least 35 points in each of the last 2 weeks. So they've got to get better here. But I'll lay it with Alabama in the first half at 13.5 or less. I mean, you know, a 2-score lead here for Alabama should be easy to get. Again, South Carolina, guys, is not a good team. They're just not. I think if they lose that game to Kentucky earlier this year, and we look at them totally different. We firmly have bottom of the SEC, not a good spot for them. So I would lay it with Alabama minus the 13.5 in the first half. I'll give you one more look, guys, real quick here. We got a minute left. I want to find a way to bet Kentucky. This is the ultimate fade spot now for Vanderbilt, right? Coming down off the win. And I think the best thing to do, to be honest with you, because I don't want to lay 2 touchdowns with that offense, I'm going under 46.5 in this game here. Similar to what Georgia and Auburn did after Georgia got spanked by Alabama, I expect the defense to stand up. I expect that Kentucky will slow it down. They'll use their run game. I think Diego Pavia and Vanderbilt are in for a rude awakening when it comes to how good this Kentucky defense is that shut down Georgia and shut down Ole Miss. It's a tough call, Ben. I see you shaking your head. Under 46.5 in Lexington.
Listen, Mark Zeno, that's brave. I will tell you that for a Vandy team that has been over in all 5 games this year by an average of 2 touchdowns, and a Commodores team that's a perfect 3-0 against the spread. Never doubt Diego. More around the rest of the country next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Week 7, Saturday, October 12th of this college football season is a huge and monumental slate all around the country. From the SEC, now out to Big Ten country in Eugene, it is 2 versus 3. the second-ranked Ohio State Buckeyes visit third-ranked Oregon on Saturday night under the lights inside Autzen Stadium. And like we discussed with Ole Miss and LSU, the road team in prime time is laying more than a field goal. 3.5 points in favor of the Buckeyes against the Ducks. Zeno, how do you break down this critical Big Ten battle on Saturday?
Well, obviously, revenge on the mind of Ohio State for what Oregon did last, was it last year in the Horseshoe or 2 years ago? I can't remember.
2021.
Yeah, it was a couple of years ago, regardless. That sticks with Ohio State, at least it sticks with Ryan Day. The problem here for Ryan Day is that, guess what? He's kind of bad on the road. 1-5 ATS away from Ohio State, when especially against unbeaten opponents in the last six times he's done it. So this hasn't been a great spot for him. Ducks are also 21-4 straight up in the second of back-to-back conference home games, including 6-2 straight up, 5-2-1 ATS versus undefeated conference conference opponents. So the spot bodes well here for Oregon. I'll say this much. If you're asking me for a comparison's sake, I trust LSU taking the points at home more than I do Oregon, because I just think genuinely Ohio State is a better team than Ole Miss is. But I'm going to take Oregon here. I think this is a great spot for them to be able to win at Autzen. I know it's going to be a different crowd. Not anything different than Ohio State has seen before in some other Big Ten games, but still, I like the Ducks here in this spot.
If we are going to double down on this game and take a long-term approach from this, both of these teams undefeated, both of these teams in the top five, Mark, who can afford the loss and still make it into the national championship? Or is it, can they both afford the loss because you think it's a pretty clean run the rest of the way?
I think Ohio State can absorb it more just because they're Ohio State and losing to a ranked opponent. Oregon still has to play Illinois. They still have to travel to Michigan. These are not like, common places that they also have to go to Wisconsin late in November, which also is never an easy spot to do. So I think Oregon's probably got another loss along the way. Genuinely, I think they do. I don't know necessarily that Ohio State does, other than Michigan. But if Ohio State loses to Michigan this year, Ryan Day is going to get fired the moment after it happens. So there is that. But other than Penn State move, other than having to go to Penn State, I think Ohio State is a much easier run the rest of the way out.
Other than having to go to Penn State, how about Nebraska in a couple of weekends at home in the Shoe? But then to open up November after a bye for the Buckeyes against Penn State. And then they end the year with what has now become a crucial two-game stretch before the game, of course. But Michigan actually might be the worst of two teams in favor of 18th-ranked Indiana. We'll see where they stand in the second-to-last Saturday of this college football season. Speaking of Penn State, the fourth-ranked Nittany Lions on the road this weekend in the Coliseum against USC. Zeno, in the summer, when we all talked about this second Saturday in October, this was supposed to be the fourth top 25, top 15, top 10 game of this Saturday. USC gets beat as an 8.5-point road favorite in Minneapolis last week by the Golden Gophers, so it loses a little bit of its steam. But will it still be a good game? 4.5-point spread in favor of Penn State on the road in the Coliseum.
I think it still should be a good game. I worry again about the James Franklin flat spot, and we sort of got it last week, right? It was a game that was scoreless in the first quarter. I know that they were up 14-3 at half, but it didn't look like Penn State really was involved in that game all that much. It didn't look like they were ready to steamroll an opponent that was much worse than they are. Much worse than they are. Now they got to go out on the road for the first time since the very first game of the year against a much lesser opponent in WVU. I think USC is a better team than West Virginia. So now they got to go back out on the road, cross country after four straight home games. God, it reeks of a flat spot for James Franklin. The difference here is that the number is manageable, right? I'm only laying 4 here, and for Penn State to be able to win this game by a touchdown doesn't surprise me with their defense. This is a very capable defense. I just wonder how much is this offense going to be, is Drew Allard and company going to go a full quarter without scoring a single point or doing anything of note in a game like they did against UCLA last week? USC's defense isn't as good as Illinois, so I don't think you worry about that. The real question is, again, if they couldn't put up points at ease against UCLA, gives me a lot, at home no less, gives me a lot of pause for them to do it against USC on the road, especially with a ticked off USC team after dropping a game to Minnesota last week.
Also, taking a look at those things that James Franklin cries about, like how unfair it is that the, you know, State College Airport, the runway's not long enough. We got to get on a luxury bus and go an extra 45 minutes over to Harrisburg. How do you expect us to fly out to California? Hey, look, what they should have done in the offseason here, guys, go lay some concrete, maybe an extra 20 feet, then you can fly out to USC. So, no excuses here. Let's get to Kansas State and Colorado. No excuses here either. Deion's boys unbeaten in conference play, Mark. They're getting 4.5. If they're at home, do they win at Folsom Field this weekend?
Can I tell you something? Can I tell you how sick I am over this game? Let me just explain I have over this game. Because somebody like me, and by the way, and I will tell you, that number that you guys are posting there is stale. There are books down to 3.5 on this game right now. And I will. The only reason I bring that up is to say that I made the foolish mistake of looking at this game on Monday and salivating at the spot that Colorado was in here. And I grabbed Colorado +6. And that closing line trophy is going to be polished and rubbed and stuck right where the sun don't shine, because I hate this play right now, given what has gone on. Despite the fact that Chris Klieman is 12-12-2 ATS on the road. He's 2-7 ATS on the road in conference when a favorite by more than 4 points. Like, this is just everything screams Colorado. National TV games, standalone, late night, Deion, everything screams. Kansas State coming off a big win, having to go back out on the road. Everything screams Colorado. And I got it +6, and it's going to be vomited all in my face come midnight on Saturday.
I don't know if I can give you a better breakdown than that, so I guess we'll leave it there. I will say, CU 7-3 against the number as a dog in the prime
era. James Franklin.
Sorry, man. To week 6 of the NFL on Thursday Night Football next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
From the college ranks to the start of week number 6 in the National Football League, Mark Zeno here for a third consecutive segment. Zeno, you're sick about Colorado and K-State. I feel kind of sick about the line for the Thursday night opener to week number 6. 3.5-point spread in favor of the 49ers against the Seahawks. Total at 49.5. Here's why I'm sick. If this was a Sunday game, I'm doubling down. Laying 3.5 with the Niners over 49.5. But it's Thursday night, short week on the road in a divisional duel. How do you see Thursday night football playing out in the Pacific Northwest?
I mean, have you seen the Seattle injury report? It looks not like good. One of those CVS receipts that is out there. You know, it's just a long list of things that you want no part of. You look at the injuries that they've had. Here's the thing for me. It's the third game in 11 days for the Seahawks. They played Monday night in Detroit. They hosted the Giants, and now they're back here for a Thursday night game. So it's a terrible scheduling spot for them. And this just in, sorry, Mike McDonald, your defense stinks, particularly your pass defense. You want to look at Seattle, what they took advantage of the first 3 weeks of this season, guys. They played Bo Nix in his first ever NFL game on the road, then Jacoby Brissett, then Skylar Thompson. The last 2 weeks, they've been carved up by Jared Goff, which we understand, and by Daniel freaking Jones. Stop it. This is a competent offense with a very good quarterback in Brock Purdy. There's a lot of ways I could play this. I think you take Brock Purdy over 1.5 touchdowns. I would take San Fran over 13.5 points in the first half. And I'm willing to lay, I got a 3 earlier in the week, but I'm willing to lay the 3 or 3.5 with San Fran. This injury report is just way too much for Seattle to overcome. Geno Smith is not that good. And San Francisco cannot afford, after blowing a 10-point lead to the Rams 2 weeks ago and blowing a bigger lead to the Cardinals last week, they cannot afford to have a division loss, a third division loss at this point in time, fall 2.5 behind Seattle. Must-win spot for San Francisco here. All desperation. San Fran's covered, 1-5 straight, gone 4-1 ATS. The only one they didn't cover was a 14.5-point spread late last year in December in a game that was academic. Give me the Niners. I'll lay the points.
All right, Thursday night football to Thursday night baseball. 8:08 tonight in Kansas City. Gerrit Cole, Michael Wacha, the line heavily favored here for the Yankees at -154 and 7.5 as a total. Will it be the worst saying in sports that's so forced, "Oh, Yankees win," or will it be Kansas City tonight?
I don't think it's the worst saying in sports. I enjoy hearing it.
Contrived, terrible.
Being that, you know, I mean, anyway,
John
look.
Sterling, too.
This is how this game goes. One, you got Gerrit Cole now on regular rest. Off 10 days rest, first time he faced him in game one. Struggled through five innings, gave up four runs, allowed seven hits, two walks. Not his best stuff. Back on regular rest. Also on the road this year, where he's got a 2.76 ERA and opposing hitters are batting .198 against him. Now, on the other end, the Yankees are facing Michael Wacha, who hasn't been good in the postseason since he was with the Cardinals 12 years ago. So let's just leave that where it is. They got to him the first time they faced him. They have to be better on offense. Do you guys know? I don't know if you've seen this. The Yankees are a putrid 3-for-24 with runners in scoring position through the first three games in this series. There has to be some positive regression coming. But here's the real rub, more than anything. If the Yankees don't score first and don't score early, I think they're dead in the water tonight. Because their bullpen, for as good as it is, it's slightly less effective when you're not pitching with a lead. The Yankees only won last night because, to a certain extent, I want to say they got lucky with Giancarlo hitting the home run. Because if he doesn't hit that home run, I think the Yankees lose that game in extra. I genuinely do. They have got to find a way to manufacture runs, and it becomes a more and more of an issue that I have exactly one less hit this postseason than Aaron Judge. So at some point in time, somebody in this lineup has to find a way to manufacture a run, and I think they do it tonight. I'll lay the half run with the Yankees in the first five. Cole should be good. Wacha should be bad. Somebody should be able to get a hit with runners in scoring position.
This is the moment, right? If you want to be a World Series contender with an easy path, comes a lot of responsibility, power, and pressure. This is the moment to match the significance of the stage. To your point, Zeno, it was Willie Giancarlo Stanton getting a 3-2 win over the Royals. Three of the four hits for the Yanks last night, two of the three RBIs. 0-for-6 with runners in scoring position, and they had a lot of base runners. Maybe not all of them in scoring position, but they drew 9 walks last night, 8 in game one, 5 more in game two, 22 walks. Patience at the plate from the pinstripes in 3 games. It has to matter. And number 99, El Capitan, you got to be better than 1-for-11 in this postseason. I love it, Zeno, because you're such a diehard fan that you're angry at how bad your team is with one win away from a spot in the LCS. That's fandom. That's passion. That's Mark Zeno. Thanks for being here. Hour number 3 up next on the Early Line.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.